Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 23, and we have the summary here of the chapter. The demigods regain the heavenly planets. This chapter describes how Bali Maharaj, along with his grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, entered the planet Sutala, and how the Supreme Personality of Godhead allowed Indra to re-enter the heavenly planet. The great soul, Bali Maharaj, experienced that the highest gain in life is to attain devotional service under the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet in full surrender. Being fixed in this conclusion, his heart full of ecstatic devotion, and his eyes full of tears, he offered obeisances to the Personality of Godhead, and then with his associates entered the planet known as Sutala. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead satisfied the desire of Aditi and reinstalled Lord Indra. Prahlad Maharaj, being aware of Bali's release from arrest, then described the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this material world. Prahlad Maharaj praised the Supreme Lord for creating the material world for being equal to everyone and for being extremely liberal to the devotees, just like the desire tree. Indeed, Prahlad Maharaj said that the Lord is kind not only to his devotees, but also to the demons. In this way, he described the unlimited causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then with folded hands, he offered his respectful obeisances unto the Lord, and after circumambulating the Lord, he also entered the planet Sutala in accordance with the Lord's order. The Lord then ordered Sukracharya to describe Bali Maharaj's faults and discrepancies in executing the sacrificial ceremony. Sukracharya became free from fruitive actions by chanting the holy name of the Lord, and he explained how chanting can diminish all the faults of the conditioned soul. He then completed Bali Maharaj's sacrificial ceremony. All the great saintly persons accepted Lord Vamadadev as the benefactor of Lord Indra because he had returned Indra to his heavenly planet. They accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the maintainer of all the affairs of the universe. Being very happy, Indra, along with his associates, placed Vamadadev before him and re-entered the heavenly planet. In their airplane. Having seen the wonderful activities of Lord Vishnu and the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, all the demigods and saintly persons, pitas, bhutas, and siddhas glorify the Lord again and again. The chapter concludes by saying that the most auspicious function of the Lord of the conditioned soul is to chant and hear about the glorious activities of Lord Vishnu. Text 1. There's no purports. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, when the supreme, ancient, eternal personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, who is universally accepted as a pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore a great soul, Bali Maharaj, his eyes filled with tears, his hands folded, and his voice faltering in devotional ecstasy, responded as follows. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. Shri Balir Uvacha Aho Pranam Maya Krita Samudyama Prapana Bhaktartha Vido Samahita Ya loka palais tuat anugraho marar alabda purva prasade sare ur pita. Shri Bali avacha. Bali Maharaj said, Aho, alas, pranamaya, to offer my respectful obeisances. Kritaha, I did, samudyamaha, only an endeavor. Prapana bhakta artha vidau, in the regulative principles observed by pure devotees. Samahitaha, is capable. Yat, that. Lokapalai, by the leaders of various planets. Tvat anugraha, your causeless mercy. Amarai, by the demigods, alabda purva, not achieved previously, apasade, unto a fallen person like me, asure, belonging to the asura community, arpitaha, endowed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is even in attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown to me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. Purport. When Vamanadeva appeared before Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj immediately wanted to offer him respectful obeisances. But he was unable to because of the presence of Sukracharya and other demoniac associates. The Lord is so merciful, however, that although Bali Maharaj did not actually offer obeisances, but only endeavored to do so within his mind, the Supreme Personality of God had blessed him with more mercy than even the demigods could ever expect. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2:40, Swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhava Grahi Janarna, because he takes only the essence of a devotee's attitude. If a devotee sincerely surrenders, the Lord, as the super soul in everyone's heart, merely understands this. Thus, even though externally a devotee may not render full service, if he is internally sincere and serious, the Lord welcomes his service nonetheless. Thus the Lord is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana, because he takes the essence of one's devotional mentality. Text again. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. As it's been explained in different verses, that actually the soul is not entangled, nor is it doing anything. Anadidvam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopikantiya na karoti na lipyate. That those who could actually see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, or Arjuna, the soul is neither entangled, nor is he doing anything. So none of us are actually entangled in the material world, but we're attached to it. That's why we seem to be entangled, because of our attachment. And because we have some desire, because we're attached to something in the material world. Therefore, Krishna gives us the necessary illusion to think that we're part of the material world, and that something's happening to us. There's certainly something happening to our consciousness, because we're aware of what's going on. But what's going on is not actually affecting this, ourselves as a spiritual being. And our entanglement is based upon our desire. And our desires are based upon our conception of life. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if we're not Krishna conscious, then naturally we'll be material conscious. We're conscious. If we're not aware of Krishna, then we're aware of the material world. And being aware of the material world generally means we're going to become entangled in trying to fulfill the desires that pass through our mind concerning what situation we're in the material world. The soul, every soul is in a particular body, and every body has a particular set of circumstances that it's dealing with, and therefore certain demands and certain desires. The body tells us what it needs, and then there is things that we may desire that even the body doesn't say it needs. Just like, for instance, the body says, I'm hungry, but there's a limit to the hunger that the body, because there's so much food you can put into the stomach. And besides that, generally speaking, the body is not demanding that we put in more, as much as possible into the stomach. A matter of fact, the body would prefer that we don't fill it all the way up. But the mind can come up with so many different desires. It's worried about, will it be enough for tomorrow, and therefore let me stock my food so that I make sure that in case something happens, there's an earthquake or the roof falls in, I'll have something to eat underneath the rubble. So the mind can come up with so many desires, and generally speaking, the body, because it's limited, can only engage us so much, but the mind can engage us unlimitedly. Just like modern society is an example of that, how they've made everything so complicated in the name of progress. The ass can eat the grass underneath its feet, it doesn't have to work so hard, but it believes that the washerman is actually going to provide his food, although he could just bend down and get it. And therefore he's willing to work very hard just to get a little bit of grass from the washerman. Silly modern society means to work hard in order to get a little bit of grass. Because the souls entangled in material nature have lost their intelligence. They've been enamored by the glamour of material so-called progress, but ultimately the progress winds up to be in the same place. One can chase his tail and think that I'm almost there, but one will never quite get there. And even if he suddenly catches up with his tail, the tail wasn't really going anywhere anyhow. So everyone's trying to catch up with their tail, and therefore going through a great endeavor, getting praise for how hard they're working, but ultimately they're working hard for nothing, just to catch their tail. just to get the grass underneath their feet. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yani sha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sani sha pashuto mune. That what is night for all sentient beings is a time of awakening for the self-control. And that what is night for the self-control is a time of awakening for all sentient beings. In other words, those who are in the material concept of life believe that the purpose of life is to somehow or another survive. And while we're surviving, provide the necessities for whatever the body and mind demand. If we can serve all the desires of the body, then start working on the unlimited desires that the mind can come up with. Even when one becomes Brahma, then one wants, with four heads, one wants to become a Brahma with five heads. One is thinking, if I had five heads, then my life would be more complete. And one who has five heads, he wants ten heads. And therefore there are Brahmas and universes with 10 million heads. And they're still not satisfied. They want to become a Brahma with 20 million heads. Double it. So that's the mind. And those who are following, chasing after their mind's desires, they're in darkness. But they think that's the purpose of life. And they think that the people who are endeavoring for spiritual consciousness, they're wasting their time for something imaginary. And the people who are chasing after spiritual consciousness, they're thinking that the people are running after their tail, they're wasting their time. And what is the process of spiritual realization? Apuryamanam achala patishtam samudram apapravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashantim atnoti nakama kami. The person is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires. If you ever noticed, wherever you look, some desire is going to pop up. You don't have to think, oh, what desire do I need? No, as soon as you look at anything, immediately some desire comes, some memory will come, so many things will come. And one who's spiritually conscious knows that unless the desire, unless the idea, unless the conception, unless the attitude is devotional, that is simply going to come and just let it go. It's not actually based upon what's real. It's based upon my previous karma. That's being the thoughts, the desires, the conceptions, the attitude. It's just arising due to my previous karma. And so it comes and goes. But one who's actually in Krishna consciousness, it's very easy to do that. Because one will think that this has nothing to do with reality. If one is actually situated in reality, if one is in the light of the sun, and suddenly someone claims that there's a shadow, and it's going to come and kill you. But you can see it's a shadow, so you don't take it seriously. You don't say, "Oh my God." Take out your gun and shoot the shadow. You know it's a shadow, so you don't care about it. Even people trying to convince you, oh, it's a shadow, be afraid. You think, well, you're in the darkness. So one who's enlightened in Krishna consciousness, even though so many desires may flow through the mind, still one is not disturbed by them. Therefore, knowledge, as Krishna says, nainam gunebhyas kartaram drashteva nupashyati gunebhyas chaparam veti madbhavam sodagachyati. When you can see that there's nothing beyond the three modes of material nature and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all of them, then you can know my divine nature. In other words, if we take it for granted that everything we're seeing, except for in relation to Krishna, it is a product of the three modes. It's like when you see, someone sees in the darkness a snake, but when they turn on the light, they realize it's a rope. Then if they turn the light off, they don't become afraid. Oh no, it's become a, now in the darkness, it's become a snake. No, they realize it was a, I thought it was a snake. I turned on the light. Now I realize it's a rope. And now the rope is never, no longer going to perturb one. That is, the rope is going to bite me. No one thinks the rope is going to bite me. No sane person thinks like that. Similarly, when we can actually see things as they are, then the influence of the three modes of material nature gradually ceases. If we think it's all of a sudden one day, the magical fairy will come and hit me with a wand and I'll become enlightened. It's not how things work. We have to hear the philosophy, at least try to hear. No conditioned soul came to the material world on pilgrimage. Every conditioned soul came here to escape from Krishna. And since hearing about Krishna is not different from him, there's a natural aversion for every conditioned soul to hear about Krishna. The conditioned soul will find some excuse to avoid hearing. If you ever noticed, you put a devotee in a room, you put a stack of, you know, Time magazines on one side, and you put Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita on the other side, and you have a closed circuit camera, and you have the devotee in there, he doesn't know he's being watched. Then you find out which one he goes to. Oh, I'll just take a little peek here. Oh my God. Wow. 3 hours later. Oh, there's the Bhagavatam there. So every conditioned soul has a natural aversion to associate with Krishna, because otherwise he wouldn't be a conditioned soul. But gradually one can develop a taste by sadhana, by practice, and therefore part of that is to get a little bit of taste and therefore be able to become sincere. Sincere means when the choice is there, well, we can do one thing or we can do the other thing. We can surrender to Krishna and have the proper attitude. First of all, easier to surrender to the body than the attitude. Because we could have a completely wrong attitude and we can do the right thing, supposedly the right thing. And no one will get all kinds of praises. Yes, yes, I know I'm great. But I'm humble too, so it's all right. Now we can do something just to hear our name vibrated. Ah, nectar. Glory be my name. So we could do that, or we can do something in order to pacify my mind. I feel guilty unless I come to the program. So I have to get, I want to go there so I don't feel guilty. Or I want to show everyone how great I am because I go there. Unlike these other fallen souls who don't attend. So we can try to satisfy our mind. We can try to satisfy our intellect. Let me figure out what this is all about. I'm interested, curious. Or we can try to satisfy our ego. That I'm going to realize who I actually am, how great I actually am. Or we could try to satisfy Krishna and have a devotional attitude to try to do it to please him. So Krishna will reciprocate whatever we're doing, but especially Krishna will reciprocate spiritually if our attitude is spiritual. Otherwise, how do we expect Krishna to reciprocate? In the varna and ashram system, then there's desires, material desires, but they're refined as one progresses in the varna ashram system. From simply using Krishna to satisfy my desires, my distress, and my desire for comfort in the material world, better circumstances to exist in, and avoiding the unpleasant circumstances. So that's there at the beginning. And then one develops some faith that Krishna, there's something higher, just like Ramananda Roy was talking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about what the goal of life is. Ramananda Roy, first of all, mentioned Varnashrama Vicharita Purushena Pumakpaman Vishnu Rajate Panta Jnanyantatoshi Karanam. That first of all, one has to practice varna and ashram. Because it's the basis of being a human being. Otherwise, without varna and without ashram, then one is actually less an animal at best, or maybe less than an animal. So it's not that we reject varna and ashram, as we, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, eka ari baya, that this is external. If you know something more, then go on. It's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected varnashram as the means, but he said that in Kali Yuga, it's not really sufficient to bring us to the spiritual platform. We don't have the time to go through the varna and ashrams. But still, it's the background of human life, and therefore, at least we should appreciate what varna and ashram is. Varna, in order to get our necessities without in harmony with natural nature, so we can have clean air, fresh water, etc., etc. And so we can execute our duties in Krishna consciousness. And ashram, so we can become detached from sense gratification and fix the mind on Krishna. So that's there. But one has to progress further in order to renounce the fruits of one's work, dedicate the work to Krishna, etc., etc. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected all of it, and finally he said, Ramananda Roy quoted from Lord Brahma, Gyane Priyasa Mudupastana Manteva, hear about Krishna. Because if we hear about Krishna, it becomes the foundation to find out what we should do, how we should think, how we should see things, and ultimately what the proper attitude should be. It comes all at once by hearing, but then we have to try to capture it. And we know we've captured it because we can remember it. Anything we can't remember, it means we didn't pay any attention or very much attention to it. But that's all right. It takes time to learn how to pay attention, because even Arjuna said, my mind is like a hurricane. It's just flying everywhere. If it was let out of my mind, it would probably tear the building apart. It's more difficult than try to control the wind. So it takes some endeavor. Therefore, we come here, we hear, and it takes an endeavor. But that's our advancement. We're actually trying to take control of our mind. We're trying to use our intelligence to take control of the mind. Otherwise, we can sit there in class and our mind can go all around. You know, prashadam. How many minutes left? Oh, it's almost there. I'm feeling separation, but not from Krishna. So the endeavor to try to hear, it's an endeavor. It takes some effort, and that effort is what advances us. That desire, that determination, Krishna notices it, and then dadami buddhi yogam tam. He gives us some intelligence by which we can actually, next time we try, we can do it a little bit better, till finally we can actually hear something. And if we hear it, then we'll remember it. So the next thing is, when the time comes and Krishna says, remember this, we go, oh my God, that's not what I want. I mean, why did I remember that for? I want to do this, I don't want to do that. Krishna says, are you sure? You know, I mean, you did bother trying to hear. You spent so much time trying. Now you heard it, now I'm giving you remembrance. And the soul says, just forget it, Krishna. Come back tomorrow. Maybe I'll be in a different mood. But if we actually remember it, and then we actually apply it, then we make actually some advancement. And then Krishna, when he sees we're actually applying it, then he actually helps us understand things even more clearly, that the purpose of applying it is ultimately to remember him, to do it for him. Then when we're applying it and we hear more, then we start thinking, well, if I'm applying it, I might as well think about actually what my subtle consciousness should be also. Not only what I'm doing externally, what should I be thinking about? It's not going to cost me anything else if I actually think about Krishna. The sky won't fall down on me if I think about Krishna. So then we start thinking, well, let me practice thinking about Krishna while I'm doing this. And Krishna reminds us to think about him. And then, when we're thinking about, I'm thinking about Krishna, but I'm not getting the full result. And if we hear more, we find out the full result is I should try to please Krishna. I should have some loving attitude towards Krishna. Not just thinking about him, but in a positive way. Not that, all right, I'm thinking about Krishna, so Indra doesn't throw his thunderbolt at me. I'm safe. No, Krishna's a nice person. I should think about him lovingly, like the gopis did. And then when we're remembering what we should be doing, we're doing it, remembering Krishna, then we think about Krishna in a devotional way. And that's called Krishna consciousness. That means Krishna is giving us full intelligence. So that's what we're trying to acquire, Buddha Yoga, full intelligence, just like Bali Maharaj did. He supposedly lost everything, but actually when he was fully Krishna conscious, didn't matter whether he had everything or he had nothing. But Krishna didn't take everything. He took everything away and then he gave him everything. Because to Krishna it didn't matter either. He thought, well, Bali Maharaj, I tricked him, took away his heavenly planet, so now let me give him something better because I feel obliged to Bali Maharaj because actually he's become my pure devotee and therefore I feel I'm the Bhakta Vatsal, I'm the servant of my devotee and therefore I feel obliged to him, so now let me give him something better than I took away from him. Just, so that's Krishna. You give him something and then ultimately he gives himself. And he himself happened to include everything. So he's willing to give you everything. Whatever you desire. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Thank you for the lecture. I was wondering if thinking about, you said we need to think about Krishna, and is thinking about Krishna service and how efficiently can we do it, similar to thinking about Krishna?
Our service. Well, I mean, we should do it our service with care and attention. Before we do it, we're going to do it for Krishna. But not that we're thinking about Krishna means our service is not done properly. But if we think before the service, Krishna has asked me to do this, I'm doing it just to please him, then actually we'll think about Krishna when we're serving him. But we should concentrate on the service. Otherwise, where is there any question of it being devotional? If you're cooking for Krishna, and you're thinking about Krishna's pastimes with the cowboy, and you burn the dal, and you burn the rice, no one's going to appreciate it, including Krishna. Here's my divine offering to you. Just take the smoke away, it'll be all right. Oh, we should do it in such a way as actually it's pleasing to Krishna. Then even if we can't think about Krishna all the time, if we do things carefully with care and attention, then Krishna will give us more intelligence so that eventually we'll be able to do both simultaneously. do it with care and attention and think about Krishna at the same time.
Thank you. There's also questions on the internet from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. Hare Krishna Maharaj, sometimes we are not aware of trains of thoughts coming from experiences from the past stored in our in subconsciousness. Is this subconsciousness also the mind?
Well, we're certainly aware of the subconscious through the mind. But subconscious, this is material, these are a mundane conception of subconsciousness. Actually, consciousness is in the soul, and Krishna is the one who gives remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So our conception of where memory comes from, it's not from the subconscious. There is something called Parabdha and Aparabdha Karma, and Krishna is in charge of manifesting that through his energy called Kala, and maybe through the gross material nature, and they call that subconsciousness. Well, our understanding is under the control of time, the three modes are under the control of time, and under the control of time, the three modes of material nature bring about karma in different ways. So what they call subconsciousness is simply our karma being manifested in a subtle way.
There's one more from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. I understood that the mind is originally in goodness and the intelligence in passion, but still the intelligence is supposed to control the mind. How can passion control goodness?
Well, passion can control goodness. Ignorance can control goodness too. You may, just like Ajamil was in goodness, but when he saw a Sudrani embracing another Shudra, he fell victim to the mode of ignorance, although he was in goodness. So, it's a question. But how passion and everyone came to the material world to lord it over the material nature. No one came here, or very few liberated souls come to the material world simply to perform devotional service like Narada Muni. So everyone was born in the mode of ignorance. So the intelligence is also not pure, because the very desire to come to the material world is based upon impure intelligence. And the mind, which is receptive, can be in passion, it can be in ignorance, it can be in goodness. So when the soul is engaged, when he hears Krishna consciousness, then the intelligence comes into the mode of goodness. And then he can actually control the mind and senses with transcendental intelligence. But he has to hear from Krishna and his representatives. Then he can get purified intelligence. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. In purport, Bali says, I get so much mercy, even more than to the demigods Krishna gave me. So, in summary, I can't understand what means so much mercy, that he means mercy like Krishna, Vamana, they destroy my false ego, or what kind of mercy he think about?
Well, I heard that in Sutala, Pracharam is better than in Indraloka. No, what kind of mercy? He got Krishna. Indra, of course, gets Vamanadeva there also. He also is his younger brother. But he doesn't stay around very, according to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Vamanadeva doesn't stay very long. He goes to his abode often. So Indra is usually without Vamanadeva's association. But Vamanadeva stays permanently as a doorkeeper for Bali Maharaj. So that's even better mercy. And Vamadeva protects Indra from when the demons come and attack, but they have to pray. But Bali Maharaj doesn't even have to pray. His doorman, Vamadeva, is standing there, always protecting him. When Ravana came, he defeated Indra and all the demigods. But when he came to Sutta Loka, met Vali Maharaj, his relative, and when he left, Vamadeva kicked him 800,000 yojanas. So, there's a more intimate relation between Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva than there is between Indra and Vamanadeva. Kwala Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.